Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up guys? I'm back and I don't know if you had any rants last week, to be honest. I watched it back, but I don't remember it. But you're definitely going to get some today, so yeah, I'm here.
I don't think we ranted. Oliver just said it was going to be a short podcast, and then we rambled.
Then an hour and 15 later. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who's ever used StreamYard before, there's like a little recording indicator in the top left of the screen that says how long we've been going. For whatever reason, it did not show up last week. And I was convinced in my head that we'd been going for like 40 minutes. And then someone mentioned in chat, oh, we've been going for like an hour 15. Fuck. I have to wrap this up quickly. But yeah, Maddie's here as well. Full house.
Yep.
Full house fun. Right then, before we dive into this week's episode, we've got to say, as always, thank you to our Substack founding members. Des Windsor McGlynn, Ali Tareen, Tito Matt, Moritz Pullman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, MJ, Matts. That list has grown really nicely over the past few weeks. Thank you to everybody who is backing what we do over on the Substack. We're ramping up the bonus content that we're putting out, not just podcasts, but in-depth written articles and various different features, opinion columns, interviews, that kind of thing. That's the place where we're going to be putting a lot of our bonus content. So go and check it out. If you haven't already, you can try 7 days for free as well. So you get a full week to see the kind of stuff that we're putting out. And thank you to those who have supported us already. Okay. We got a game to recap, 2 games to preview. I've got a feeling this week's episode is going to be probably dominated by the game that we've got to recap, which occurred last night at San Siro. We're back after the international break. We played Juventus at home. As we mentioned in the preview bit last week, we've had a good sort of resurgence against them. It used to be a very one-sided fixture. We had a run where we won like 1 in 18 games against them in the banter era, but we did the double over them last season, and I think the general consensus going into this game was that we are the better side and the side that are more likely, all things equal, to challenge for the title this season. Now, I don't want to be one of them fans that like completely writes off the legitimacy of a result. Like, you know, I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big sympathist with those fans who say, oh, that result doesn't count. You know, like they just put it to one side and like try and move on. But that's honestly where I'm at with this one. Like, I'm almost in denial about it. I just feel like it didn't tell us anything, this game in particular. We normally go through games chronologically and talk about the key incidents that happened. I don't see the point in doing that because this game was obviously massively conditioned by the red card that occurred in the 40th minute when Malik Chow brought down Moise Kean as he was going through on goal, or at least he got in behind him and he was the last man. And then Juve won with a deflected shot in the sort of midway through the second half from Manuel Locatelli that probably looks like it's going to be an own goal. Like, it was a huge deflection that it took. I just found myself a bit deflated after it all. Like, it wasn't a good advert for the league. It was a red card. We should start with that, probably. Yep. I don't have any complaints about with that. I think it was the right call from Mariani.
I don't know why he did that.
Oh, like, I do.
Mariani had a good game.
After that. At this point, Mariani hadn't been tested at all. He had zero saves.
But yeah, I mean, after that though, I was just like, damn, are you a fucking idiot, man?
Like, yeah, 100%.
But also, like, have trust in your goalie. Because going 1-0 down with 11v11 is better than being 0-0 with one man down.
Yeah, of course. You always
want to. We ended up losing all your players. Wild deflection.
Yeah, which to me says, I mean, look, if you look back at that game, and I even heard it on a morning footy this morning. I was watching that. They even said, like, if you didn't know Milan was a man down, you wouldn't have been able to tell, right, even though we lost, yeah. You know? Yeah. And I think that speaks volumes for how much better of a team we are than this specific Juventus side. Years ago, losing to Juventus 1-0 would have been like it was only one goal, you know? Like, they used to smack us. But now I'm screaming at my TV. I'm upset because I'm like, it wasn't supposed to happen this way.
Yes.
And I could accept any result, especially with the third string goalkeeper in, with our second string right back playing left back. You know, like, we had some weird things going on, and you're like, whatever happens, it could happen. I could see it going either way. what I didn't see was the way it was going to go, of course. So, but look, he made the right call, in my opinion. Keane was getting the best of Chow multiple times. He got past him a couple times. He was looking really threatening. And when you don't know how Morant is going to do, you know, he's only played 1 minute in his entire Milan career, 40 years old. He's thinking, this is a really strong striker going against someone who's probably the weakest goalkeeper in the squad. I'm going to take one for the team and just prevent this. And then hopefully we could block the free kick and we're dominating everything else. And hopefully we could continue with that. I understand that thought process, especially when it's a split second decision, when you don't see that Tomori's running over and is maybe going to get there. Tomori was arguing it, but ultimately that doesn't matter with the ref. I don't think so either. I thought it was a clear red.
He's got to.
I understand why you did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like Luis Suarez handball in the World Cup. It's a clear fucking red. Get that guy out of there. But you know why he did it. And it was the right call.
You roll the dice.
Winning that game.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this one backfired on us.
Yeah, playing against Ghana and Juve is two different things.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just saying, but like, there are reasons to take red cards sometimes. You know, if you're not doing anything malicious, you're not biting someone, you're not, you know, kicking them in the face intentionally, you're pulling them down, you know, you're getting the red, and it's to save your team from a goal, right? Mm-hmm. It's denial of an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, and you're doing it because it's an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. You don't want them to have that. I get it. That said, it might have cost us. And, you know, again, you roll the dice. It is what it is. But I don't think they really were that threatening. After the red card in the second half, I think they recognized we have a chance here. We're going to go for it. And they did push a lot more. The total possession of the game ended. Let me just double check. We had 52% to their 48. Well, going into halftime, we had 68%. So that tells you how much of the second half they dominated. But even then, I mean, they didn't
really still finish with ball possession despite playing for, including added time, 58 minutes a man down is. And you got to, we tired massively in the last 15 minutes and they were just kind of knocking it about. So they basically had near 90% possession for those closing stages.
I was really frustrated with how we ended the game. The last maybe 15 minutes, we left our half one or two times. The final play of the game, we were in our half until the final pass. We got in there and Kier puts it up and doesn't even beat the first man. Like, this was so a long ball specialist and you can't beat the first man.
It's like we waited specifically until there were five. We passing it around the back, waited until there were 5 seconds left of added time. And in Italy, they don't factor in how long the ball hasn't been in play in added time. They will blow bang on 6 minutes. Like, they're not playing an extra 30 for the time that the ball was out of play. They will blow on 6 minutes. So you see that you've not got long left, dicking about with it. And then when you try fire it long, as you say, it didn't beat the first man. That was a little bit infuriating, but I think the lads were tired. You know, they were struggling by that point.
Of course,
it is understandable.
Wilson was doing the job of two men.
And you also have to have an eye on the games that are to come. You know, massive PSG game on Wednesday night and then the Napoli game on Sunday, which we will obviously come on to. But maybe there's a little bit of energy conservation knowing that the next two games are arguably going to be bigger now. But the red card, I mean, just a few doubts that I have about it. The first one is, does Chiao think that he's the last man? I think he must know that it's him v. Kane, and then if he's in behind, then there's a real problem. But maybe he scans the field and maybe he sees Tomori recovering to his right. Second doubt is he slips. It's not necessarily a doubt, but he slips. That's part of the problem. So when Kane has rolled him, the ball comes into him.
Kane's technically pronounced Kane.
No, it is actually pronounced Kane. No, it's Moise Kane. That is actually how you say it.
I've never heard anyone say Kane.
I don't want to trust you.
I would say Kane as well. And it was like mentioned on Twitter and stuff like, why are they saying Kane? But apparently the proper pronunciation is Kane. I'll carry on saying Kane then because I feel better with that. Anyway, he backheels it round the other side of Chiao and then rolls him on the other side. And we've seen that move before against Milan defenders, usually in the derby. And as Chiao grabs a hold of him, he loses his footing and that's what pulls him to the floor. So it's kind of gravity that does the work, basically. But he also knows what he's doing to not let him just get a clear path through and go.
But he also has like a vice grip on the dude's shirt. Like, if you're slipping and you don't want to pull him down, then let go.
You could let go, yeah. Absolutely. Or maybe you just think
if he's going to hit him regardless and possibly get the red card, then like
you might as well
fucking take him out, right?
Yeah. And I think he knows that he's got a strong grip on him as well. I was just saying that I purely picked it out after the game and said like he is partly unfortunate because he slipped and that's what proper yanked him down rather than it mean maybe debatable contact. And the third doubt is I think Morante is getting to that ball. I have to be honest, like having watched it over and over again, the broadcast angle rather than the slow-mo angles from behind or whatever, I actually think that Morante, who is rushing off his line already, he probably gets to that ball first, or at the very least, it's not an easy one-on-one chance because the keeper's in close proximity. So I think maybe he didn't need to do it, but quick fire spur of the moment, you've got to make these decisions, Ciao. Brought him down, and I haven't seen a single Milan fan arguing on social media or in our comment section saying that it wasn't a red card. So for those people, those fans of other clubs who bitch about us bitching about refereeing decisions, for once, I think we're all in agreement that he got that one right. Mariani refereeing the rest of the game was a little bit suspect, I'll say that. First half, he was giving everything their way, and then second half, to even it up, he gave literally everything our way.
Let me just look at the yellow cards because there was a ton. I don't remember the amount, but yeah, you know, Juventus had four, we had one, and then obviously the red as well.
If Keane was coming straight down the middle of the field, I could see like doing that tactically smart, you know. But he's coming into the box at an angle,
like he'd have to straighten his run up and then right.
And yeah, he's either gonna have to go near post or far post, and hopefully the goalie has the ability to like get big and on the ground, right? So
yeah.
And he proved he does at the end of the game. Yeah.
And at the end of the first half, has the
trust of his defenders, you know. I mean, Mike will be back on Wednesday.
Yeah.
But regardless, it's just, you know.
This is a big reason why I hate having big games back to back, right? We had Roma, then Inter. Obviously, you got to play tougher in those big games. Tomorrow gets a red card against Roma, misses Inter. Then Mike, now we got red cards against Genoa, which is not a big game. We paid a huge price, but that's why we missed him for this game. But now we're going into Napoli again without a starting defender in Ciao. They're just flipping. Obviously, Tomori is the more valuable one, in my opinion. So I think we should be okay. And I don't think Kalulu looked bad coming back from injury. We should mention that. He was pretty good. So happy with Kalulu to start against Napoli. But it's just frustrating having these huge games back-to-back when you know those are the games you got to give your all. And if you have to take one for the team, you do it. And, you know, you roll the dice. It's also annoying when there's a big game immediately after an international break because you wait 2 weeks to watch your team play and then you got to come back and watch that bullshit. Like,
it's just like, as well, so the Roma game was obviously before an international break. Tomori gets the red card. So we have the entire international break to prepare for playing Inter without Tomori. So you do that, and obviously we started with Ciao, Kier, centre-back pairing. It didn't work out. We conceded 5 goals, and we looked absolutely horrendous at the back. And then before the international break, we know Teo's picked up a ban. We know Maignan's got a red card, so we're not going to have those two. And then Sportiello gets injured. That kind of messes up the plans a little bit as well. But you know you've got Mirante and Florenzi there. And then again, your plans are changed, you know, during the game because of a red card that happens in the 40th minute. And you've got to, again, completely reshuffle the approach after having done it in the build-up to the game anyway. I just don't think
that build-up doesn't even really count because every centre-back we had available was called up both times.
Yeah.
So it's not like they really got to adjust with the other player. Obviously, they've played together in training and whatnot, and it's not the most difficult adjustment to make, but still, it is an adjustment that they didn't get to make properly. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I have no issues with the way that went. That is what it is. I know we disagreed on this, Ollie, in the chat about taking Pulisic off for Ciao. Not for Ciao, but you know what I mean, because of Ciao.
Yeah.
Look, I know he didn't do a whole lot in the first half. He only got 40-some minutes, so he didn't really get to display himself, but he was near post on Giroud's shot that got saved, and if he was, you know, maybe 6 inches closer, he could have got the tap in. So he was in positioning still. There was a chance where I was screaming about Reinders. This guy's doing my fucking head in. He won't pass the goddamn ball. But again, Reinders had the option to pass to Pulisic, who was wide open, and he looked at him and then turned and then tried to dribble two defenders and gets fucking stuffed. And I'm just like, this guy every time. But I think it was not the right move. I want two people who are mobile and tactical. Pulisic's best trait is dribbling. look, he wasn't getting the best of Danilo, but he also didn't have a whole lot of time to do that. You know, it's first time going against the person, so give him a bit more than 40 minutes to figure him out. Then you get a guy like Giroud who's up there who's pretty stiff. Yes, he offers you a header in the box, which is what our strategy became, but I'd argue that shouldn't have been our strategy because it doesn't work too often for us and never really has. Leao's a dynamic player. We should let him create and run, and we should do the same with Pulisic because we don't have Teo, so we don't have that linkage on the left wing right now. We got our backup right back playing left back. And then on the right side, we now have Calabria, whose strength is the overlapping run as well, who doesn't have someone to overlap with because now Pulisic's gone. Then you just got Giroud, who's just going to kind of be standing there. He'll put a little pressure defensively, but not a whole lot else. And then to later take Giroud off and put on Jovic, who is the exact same player but doesn't defend. I mean, that blows my mind. When you got a guy like Okafor, who actually has goals on his name on the bench, not get utilized, who gives you something different. Why would you continue with the same strategy when it's not working with a player in the same profile who's just younger and worse? Like that doesn't make any sense to me at all.
It's the old man.
Our top goal scorer in Pulisic to cover for a missing center back, and then you take off our other top goal scorer who same goals but more penalties in Giroud for a guy who does the exact same thing but obviously worse with zero goals, leaving a guy who gives you a different profile with goals on the bench. I don't know. It drives me fucking insane. And I think Adley looked like shit. I think Krunic was awful. You know, I wanted Krunic back so bad, and he clearly wasn't ready. He wasn't up to match fitness.
Yeah.
I'm not going to slate him too much because of that, because he's missed a month. And that's a tough game to come back in, a man down that late into the game as well. But my God, he was not ready. Mentally, physically, everything. His game was off. He made so many mistakes, so many passes. Two Juve players, like not even bad passes, just straight up two Juve players.
Isn't that the Krunic that we're used to, though?
It is, but it's not the Krunic we started the season with.
Exactly, no, yeah.
It's been like, what, 6-7 games? He played like 4 games well. Like, we all knew that this was going to happen.
There was a moment towards the end of the game.
He was not going to be like the world beater, not world beater, but like the player he was the first 4 games for entire season.
There was a moment towards the end of the game where Musa gets the ball in our own box right on the edge towards the center, and he gets challenged and he starts limping and he drops down. There's no whistle. We know there's no whistle. The ball's been passed 3 or 4 times. The ref is right there. And the man that Krunic should be covering has the ball. And Krunic is instead saying, hey, are we going to go back to this? Like almost playing you do in a pickup game.
He wanted him to kick the ball out of play because Musa had cramp. They're not kicking the ball out for cramp.
I agree. Yeah.
Play on. I completely agree. Like, what are you doing? Yeah.
And he's a professional. He's over 30. He knows how to do it. You're giving yourself a built-in excuse like you would in a pickup soccer game that you're just getting your ass beat. You're like, oh, I was trying to stop the play. I wasn't covering him. You know, someone's hurt. Just and the ball's getting passed around all on his side. No one else is there because we had to take Pulisic off. And we're doing nothing. And then they get a cross in. And thank God Morata made a double save on Vlahovic. But it's like, we just... That was one of the worst performances I've seen from him ever.
Yeah, it was bad. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he wasn't 100%. And also, it's quite a tough game. It's a tough situation to come into, you know, because we're a man down and a goal down. So, like, are we supposed to be sort of not taking too many risks, or are we really going to try and get an equaliser? It can be tough as a defensive midfielder in that situation. On the attacking change that was made, what I found really strange, because I thought we should have brought Okafor on over Jovic as well. Firstly, because he's actually scored goals, and secondly, because he would have given us a bit of pace, bit of movement, a bit of fluidity, something that we were clearly lacking.
We had someone on the field already that could do that, but he was taken off.
Well, then Pioli said after the game that Okafor wasn't 100% and he hadn't done some of the training sessions in the week prior with the rest of the team. So why name him on the bench if you didn't think that he could play any part in the game? And secondly, Krunic clearly wasn't 100% and yet you were happy to call upon him in a similarly difficult situation. So that didn't make any sense to me. Since we disagreed about it last night, I can now see the other side to it, and I could see a situation where it would have worked better to bring Giroud off, which he was never going to do, let's be honest. It was the most obvious change in the world, wasn't it? Like, keeping Giroud on and bringing Pulisic off. But I could see a situation working better where Pulisic played almost in behind Liao roaming, but more over to the right side, and Liao actually took up a role as a centre forward. You know, as people might say, yeah, but then what about the dribbling? He was having success down the left. We're not going to get many one-on-one situations anymore when we're a man down. So if you instead replace the centre forward who's static with somebody who can actually run off the shoulder and create problems on the break, someone who's going to be in the box more and going to get on the end of crosses more, I think that might have created more danger. And Pulisic would have been probably the man to exploit that better with his creativity on the right. But at the time, I did think it was the more logical substitution to take off Pulisic, who hadn't done anything in the game up to that point, whereas Giroud had had that shot that was well saved. So I think Pioli just went with what he thought was the more confident pairing at that time. But it's splitting hairs because the game after that was just not good. It was not a good advert for Serie A, I'm afraid. You know, you've got this being billed as sort of a big game with Scudetto ramifications. I'm not just salty because we lost it either. I just think it showed everything that we thought about the two teams. You know, us being on top, but unfortunately unable to take our chances in the first 40 minutes. We didn't actually create many major chances, but the one that we had was saved. And then Juventus, from going from defensive mode to not knowing how to force the game, to scoring a lucky goal, to seeing out a 1-0, exactly how Max Allegri teams do. You had Allegri being an absolute idiot on the sidelines, ripping off his suit jacket and shit. And it's like, you know, what are we watching here? It was a really, really poor game of football, to be honest. The execution from both sides was terrible, and a 35-yard deflected shot to win it. It was pretty fitting.
No, but I think that could have all changed if Pioli made different subs.
Oh, you're on mute, I think.
Yeah, you're on mute.
Oh, unless the headset's died.
No, I was.
There we go. There we go. There we go.
It. In my rage, I must have hit it.
last season, he tried Liao as striker. It didn't work, right? But now we have two wingers that are dynamic, right? You have Giroud, who's just a post in the midfield who does not move at all. And you bring on Jovic, and it's funny. You called the Pulisic sub, and Isaac called the Jovic sub. And it's just so predictable what he's doing. Yeah. And we have players that can be so dynamic, but he goes towards the same players every single time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you look at teams that have two strikers, they don't have a, like, dude that's just standing there and then one striker that's moving around. Like, they're both moving around so they can create stuff and play off each other. You look at Lautaro and Thuram, they're moving everywhere. They're doing great. That's why it works. So when we're forced to go to a two-striker formation because of the red card, you would think, look, we know Liao's not the best playing as a striker, but he's a winger and he's fast, he's dynamic, he's the best player on our team. Pulisic has similar characteristics. He can move around. We know Giroud can't, and he's not fast enough to even make those link-up plays. It works having Giroud in the starting 11 because we have all the people around him. He could do those flicks to everyone who are already making the runs. It's a nice central point. But when you have to be the focal point of the attack in a two-striker formation, you can't be standing around because you only have one guy making a run. So you just need one guy to cover him, and then he's shut down. So if you have the two, even if you take off Pulisic, you have to bring on Okafor then, because at least he's used to playing in a two-striker formation. And then you have Liao and Okafor, or you have Liao and Pulisic, and they could do that a bit better. Pulisic's played down the middle. Every goal he's scored, well, bar his first goal, has been from near the penalty spot. You know, he gets in that position, and it's because of link-up play and being dynamic, something that Giroud doesn't do. And again, I'm not even attacking Giroud because he works in our system when we have a full 11 with everyone. But when we're on 10 men and we're switching to a bastardized 4-3-2, whatever the hell it becomes, you have to have two people who could play as dynamic moving strikers. You know, you need to create a little chaos.
Yeah,
and it's not good when the chaos is your defending. It has to be your offense as well. So it was frustrating.
And also, like, we Giroud's 37. We've got to manage his minutes. Is it really a good idea to keep him out there for another 30 minutes, a man down, chasing shadows, jumping for aimless aerial duels? Like, Jovic came on, and the one he didn't do anything, really, let's be honest. But the one thing I will give him credit for is every ball that was lumped up to him, he went up for. He didn't win many of them, but, like, he occupied someone, you know, like he at least dragged the defender out with him, and he gave us not an out ball, but like there was something to aim at. Whereas with Giroud, you just don't even get that. Like, he's so not up for the battle anymore. I praise him for what he does when we're not in possession. Like, I think that he runs, he presses, he closes down the channels pretty well. But he just he's not involved even at 11v11. So keeping him out there, it must have only been to try and keep a centre back occupied and just hoping that he could flip one onto Liao or something. And it didn't work. And I'd like to have seen what would have happened the other way if he'd have brought on if he'd have brought off Giroud instead of Pulisic. The other note that I have from the game is midfield erratic.
Oh, they were awful.
They let us down. They let us down.
They were awful, and they're getting away with it in this podcast because I'm so mad about Pioli subs, to be honest with you. Because Adley was shit. I saw someone call him Badly, and I think that's the greatest nickname ever for this performance because it was bad. He was all over the place. He had to come off. Same with Reinders. Reinders, again, all over the place, making the wrong decision each and every time. Musa looked good.
He looks good compared to the other two, though.
Exactly.
Right? Like,
he also had to play right wing, you know?
Yeah, he played two areas of the pitch. So,
of the three, the best.
This is the thing, like, so I thought this was the game to start Adli if Krunic wasn't right, as we know that he wasn't, because Juve were going to sit off. They are not the type that is going to press the deep line playmaker like mad. They're not going to do that. It's not Allegri's way. So I thought he might have the time and the space. And he kind of had that in the opening 30 minutes. He was getting on the ball a fair bit. The centre-backs were splitting and he was trying to do things. But you just realise in certain situations, particularly when we have to defend, how slow he is and like how clumsy he can be as well. Not even clumsy like Pobega running into people and stuff, like sort of ambling about and not even really getting stuck in. He had a couple of moments where I thought, that's good play, well done, Adley. And then you think he'll gain in confidence from there. I know the red card didn't help anybody, especially a defensive midfielder who's now more exposed than he was before. But I just, yeah, him, Reinders, I'm afraid it's another big game where he's gone missing. We can't have that. Like, we're playing a midfield three. We need at least two of the three to be good, to be honest. Ideally, all three, because if all three of them come off, and that includes Loftus-Cheek, who will hopefully be back from injury soon, if all three of them come off, we've got a really good chance in any game against any opponent because they're a perfect blend. But Reinders,
the starting three in the midfield, I mean, it picked itself, right? I don't think Pioli made any mistakes choosing the three. It just, for whatever reason, did not work out today or yesterday.
I mean, they're all new.
Yeah.
They were.
So, like, we're sitting here like they sucked, but, like, also this is the first time that they've all played Juve, right? Like, there's going to be growing pains.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Pioli made shitty subs. Cha got a red card. Like, there was a lot of pressure put on this midfield in this game. And they couldn't handle the pressure. But, like, you know, later on in the season, they might be able to.
But also, we need to remember as well that we were not dominated at any point, barring when we were chasing the game. And even then, it wasn't dominated like they were getting chance after chance. No. Mirante made a couple of good saves. But I felt that we had complete control in this game until the red card happened. And even then, up until 55 minutes, we started the second half better. It was us that was looking for the goal. Like, that is crazy, but that's Juve. They're going to sit off and they're going to try and hit you at the other end. They don't really know how to come on to you and to try and force it. And
there was a stat, and I don't know which commentator said it, but one of the guys on Paramount, it wasn't Bonetti, it was whoever his partner was, and I can't remember who it was, but he had said that Juventus sit 14th deepest in the league for defense, which is typically on par with, you know, relegation sides or like 15th through 16th place. Or 15th or 17th place, those teams sit that far back. That's how far deep they're defending the whole time. And it really is the ugliest football you'll ever watch. As we saw how terrible that game was, the team in first and in third playing like that. Like, it just, they were comfortable and always have been with Allegri. That's even the Juve fans' criticism of him, that they're comfortable to just sit back and wait and wait and wait and wait until one thing happens in their favor. And then they turn it on and go. And a part of me actually respects it because it obviously works, right? They got the win and they're in third place. We've gotten a lot of wins this season doing exactly that. It's the same thing that Mourinho has perfected. he's starting to get figured out now as well, but it does work. It's just really frustrating and ugly to watch, but it gives us a ton of possession. It gives us the opportunity to create. So as long as we keep the people on who could dribble and create chances, then we could create a chance. But, you know,
one of the Italian media outlets, I can't remember which one it was, said that essentially Allegri bought a scratch card, which I thought was a good way of putting it. Like, you know, they went there with nothing to really lose, but, you're going to get lucky. And, oh, he was hoping that Juve were going to get lucky. Like, the right situation would occur that they could take. Maybe they take, you know, the one big chance that they make, or maybe they get a man advantage, as they did. Also, I think his original game plan was to take it level, like, 65 minutes, and then he was probably going to throw Vlahovic and Chiesa on off the bench, the two main difference makers that they have, and that was going to be their roll of the dice. In the end, didn't really need to do that, although Vlahovic did come on in the second half, and then Chiesa later on. But yeah, that's just them. That's just them. They're going to play a very, very low-risk game and hope that they get the
ball. Well, and that fucking goal, too. They didn't create anything with that goal. That was just a wonder shot out of nowhere. Mm. They said, fuck it, let's have it. And Moratti was getting to it, if not for the deflection.
Yeah, he was.
It was going wide still.
It looked like it was going wide to me, but
tell Locatelli to fuck off.
Yeah, his celebration was very, very strange.
Yeah.
He does that. Well, you know, and as much as I hate it, I did like the symmetry that he scored a goal for us against Juve, long shot screamer, closer, about 20 yards out, in the 65th minute.
An actual screamer.
On October 22nd. Of that, whatever year it was. And then now, same day, October 22nd, scores a screamer against Milan in the same stadium for Juventus. Total mirrors. This time it was a 63rd minute. Last time it was a 65th. That shit's weird. I hate it, but I also love it. I really want it to be overturned into an own goal just so he doesn't have that anymore.
Yes, me too. And crying at the end of the game. I mean, you've gone third. Well done. Like,
well, he probably had... never mind. I was going to say probably had a bet. Yeah, but...
Yeah, there we go. I saw someone tweet something like... Tonali wiring Chiawi's money after the game, which, you know, we do not as a podcast. Please, no legal action. We will move on then and do tops and flops and pull the curtains on this game. Top of the match for me was Tomori. I think he held the back line together well prior to the red card and especially afterwards. He didn't really put a foot wrong. He continued his excellent form, and also want to give a little shout to Mirante, who I hope one of you two picks, because those are the two big positives.
Yeah, I was going to pick Mirante. I don't think we're ever going to get another opportunity to do that. Again, this is a third string goalkeeper. He probably wasn't going to play if it wasn't for Sportiello getting an injury, you know, days before kickoff. And Mike was suspended, not hurt. So, like, the chances of a third string goalkeeper starting another match is very slim. And I think he did very well. I think he could probably still be starting for a lower half team in the league. So, really impressed with him. He's going to get my top. Flop's going to be Krunic. I don't care that he only played 30 minutes. That shit was disgusting. I don't want to see it anymore.
Goalie, as everything that AJ just said. Flop is Pioli for his disastrous subs.
Glad you picked him. I wanted to, but I also wanted the yellow Krunic more.
I've got a good chow with the red card, unfortunately. I feel for him because, like, he's a young defender. He's still learning the ropes. And another thing that's been picked out today in the media, we do play a high line and we do embrace having one-on-one situations all over at the back. And that can have its positives and its negatives. But when you're playing a top side, as we found with Lautaro and Thuram earlier this season, and you're going one-on-one, if you lose even one of those battles, it can be fatal. And unfortunately, Chiao got spun by his man, brought him down, red card, and that conditioned the outcome of the game. I know that there'll be Juve fans who are like, oh, Milan weren't even doing anything up until that moment. That's not the point. You're missing the point. It did condition the outcome of the game because we were totally in control before that. And in the second half, if we hadn't found a way, we could afford to take more risks at 11v11. And I think even Juve fans would acknowledge that if it wasn't for that red card, we'd have probably found a way. If not, it'd have been 0-0, which would not have been disastrous for us either. So yeah, ciao, unlucky. One thing I want to read out before we move on. We now have the most red cards of any team in Serie A so far this season, 3 in our first 9 games, and the most total cards of any team, 25 in total. Disciplinary
the rest
problem.
Loved us.
Discipline's a problem. You've got to keep your men on the field and your best men out there in the starting lineup if you're going to win games consistently. And unfortunately, we paid for the absences this time and obviously the red card.
I do agree with everything you said about the red card, but I also disagree that it dictated the outcome of the game. Obviously, it did, but I don't think that was the sole deciding factor. I think more so purely subs, because I think the game, there was still plenty of time in the game. And the fact that they only scored a 35-yard deflected screamer that no normal player is taking anyways, shows that we still were defensively sound going into the game with 10 men minus a defender. So I don't know. I agree with everything you said, but at the same time, I don't, if that makes sense at all.
Well, you said it in the first words. You said it didn't influence the outcome of the game, but it did. So there we go. Let's move on then to the Champions League game against Paris Saint-Germain. So we go from a league defeat against Juve to looking for our first win in the Champions League. Tough trip to the Parc des Princes, or however you would say it in French. That's my best attempt to face off against PSG, who are not having it all their own way in Ligue 1 this season under Luis Enrique. They are third in the table behind Monaco and Nice. They've won 5 of their opening 9 games. They've scored 20 goals and let in 7. They won 3-0 at the weekend and Mbappe scored. So they're coming into this arguably in a little bit better form than what we are. But in the Champions League, bit of a mixed bag for them already so far. They beat Dortmund 2-0 at home in the first game of the group stages. Then they got spanked 4-1 by Newcastle at St. James's Park in the second. And that's the result that's kind of thrown the game wide open once again. The starting lineup that they fielded against Strasbourg was Donnarumma in goal, Soler at right back, Marquinhos and Pereira centre backs, Lucas Hernandez at left back, Fabian Ruiz and Vitinha, the defensive midfielders, Lee and Barcola as the wingers, and then Ramos and Mbappe as the front two, like a 4-2-2-2 type thing, or I guess more of a 4-4-2. How we feel about this one? Toughest game maybe of the group stages on paper?
It's hit or miss, man. The thing about PSG is they're such a strong team that they could blow probably every team in the world out of the water on their day. And then they also can lose 4-1 to Newcastle sometimes. You know, like, it's very interesting. We know everything there is to know about Donnarumma. We know he is prone to huge mistakes. And when he makes them, he can't stop making them. But we also know that he could give you an 11 out of 10 goalkeeping performance at the same time. He's very up and down. His highs are as high as they get, and his lows are also pretty low. Mbappe is arguably the best player in the world right now, definitely top three. So that's always going to be a ton of trouble. I think Gonçalo Ramos is a fantastic striker as well. Young, still coming into his own for PSG, but he's been putting in good performances. I think Kang Lee is a really good player as well. He's done well for them. So obviously, the storyline with Teo and his brother going against, well, they, I guess they won't have the same matchup. They won't be playing against each other, but, you know, same position, opposite team. That's interesting. Marquinhos has always been good. He's been there for a while, but yeah, it's an interesting one. It's another game where any result won't surprise me, barring something ridiculous like 20 red cards, you know, but yeah, we'll see what happens. I don't know. That's the best assessment I could give you. They're a good
team. Won't they call the game after so many red cards?
What's that?
Don't they call the game after so many red cards?
Yeah, they do. It actually happened over here once. It was Sheffield United against West Brom, and the players just essentially erupted into a massive brawl and kept kicking each other after that, like in separate challenges, and the game had to be called off. Call it the Battle of Bramall Lane. It's worth a watch on YouTube if you've never seen it. But yeah, too many red cards, and they called the game off. And it's 3-0, I think, in favour of whoever didn't have the last red card. So that's wild in itself.
Damn, so it just comes down to who the ref looked at. That's crazy. Right.
Next red card wins. So like PSG, they've got obviously Luis Enrique, who divides opinion as a coach, I think, amongst many people. But you know what you're getting with him as a manager. like very possession based football, but rather than it being tiki taka, they try and sort of move the ball around quickly. And essentially they're like us in that they try to get it to Mbappe as quickly as possible, like we do with Liao, because he's the danger man. And they hope for runners from midfield and for the wingers to get involved, all that shit. Their results this season are quite funny. Like, they drew 0-0 at home to Lorient first game of the season, drew with Toulouse, then they beat Lens and they hammered Lyon, and then they lost at home to Nice, and then they hammered Marseille, and then they drew with Clermont Foot, whoever they are. You know, like, they are very, very up and down. So we've got to hope that we catch them on one of them down days. Their starting lineup is pretty good, I think. You've got to factor in as well that is Kolo Muani like knocking around? I feel like he should.
I mean, he's there. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they rested him at the weekend. They've obviously got Ousmane Dembele as well.
He came on to play 67th minute against Strasbourg.
Yeah, Hakimi's normally starts at right back, I think, as well. So maybe they rotated a little bit at the weekend and obviously still got the win. So what are we doing formation selection wise for this? I guess Maignan and Teo come back in. You probably play Tomori Chow because Chow will serve a ban against Napoli. Are you sticking with Calabria or bringing Florenzi in at right back? How's the midfield look?
I'm keeping Calabria.
I am too.
For as much hate as he gets, and you know, I'm from you. Yeah, I give him a lot of hate, but compared to some people on Twitter, you would think he's my favorite player. Like, there's some people who really hate Calabria. I'm not putting Florenzi against Mbappe. That is a fool's errand. Like,
what about Kalulu?
I'm not doing that either.
Yeah, he's not great.
Calabria, like, obviously does very well against better talent.
Yeah,
he does against Kavara. It's like
the talent that he like sucks against.
It's strange. You know, it's the weirdest thing. The guys that are gonna like do a lot of like cutting back and forth, you know, I feel like Calabria just locks down so well because he's not gonna commit to anything. So when the players are cutting, waiting to see which side you're gonna go, and he just, I'm not going anywhere. They just stop, you know, and then he puts a foot in and gets it. So I think he's probably our best right back to stop Mbappe, and that's
wild thing to say.
Yeah. I'm already thinking, oh, that's getting clipped. Like, I'm not ready for that. So I don't know, man. Do we win this game? Probably not.
In midfield, are you picking Krunic or Adli? And then if Loftus-Cheek is back. Oh, right. Well,
no, not Pobega. No. I'm probably picking Adli if Krunic is not at 100%. If he says I probably shouldn't have played that Juve game, I'm not ready yet, I fucking agree. And I thought Adli looked bad, but
no, if he said that.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, fuck
me. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That's risky. If he says I'm ready, I know I fucked up and I'm going to do a lot better, I'm putting everything in, then okay, maybe, but. We know Pioli's going to do it, right? Like, as long as Krunic says he's 100%, then Pioli plays him. So,
I think Krunic starts. Like, I'm not saying I would do that, but I think Krunic starts. I think Loftus-Cheek, he didn't train with the team today, so tomorrow will be massive. But even still, I think you head into a situation where he's not 100%. So you've probably got Musa and Reinders again. It's probably going to be the same midfield, and that kind of worries me, you know, because, well, there was difficult scenario for them to battle in the last game, and also it didn't really seem to work, and that was against a team that were happy for us to have the ball. So what happens when we play a team that dominates possession? You know, maybe Krunic having a bit more discipline will help, but I don't know, we shall see. And we can't change anything in attack really either.
The way PSG plays a lot more into our favor than the way Juventus does, I think. You know, they're not sitting that deep. They're going to go forward. They play pretty similar to us in possession.
High line. So
if we have possession, then we can make those attacks. Excuse me, sorry. And just vice versa, they could do the same thing. Obviously, Mbappe is a better goal scorer than anyone on our squad. So that's really scary. That's the big risk there. Especially, like you said, we set up for a lot of one-on-one situations, our center back versus their striker. So that's a really scary thought waiting to happen, especially if Chow's thinking I'm going to take another red card against Mbappe here. Let Mike have a go, you know, like let Mike try it. But on the flip side of that, everyone on our team knows Donnarumma, and they know what it would mean to the fans to get one over Donnarumma. I think we have a very good chance of getting it to him. is this game that this is away, correct? This is the away game. So he's going to be nervous to play us, but not as nervous as when he returns to San Siro and hears everyone, because he's going to get crazy whistles and boos. And we've seen him collapse under pressure from crowds quite a few times. So I don't know. I think this is a lot more winnable than I originally was thinking it is, but I also still think we probably might lose.
I think after seeing what Newcastle did to PSG, I'm like, oh.
Because we shut Newcastle down.
Right.
And then Dortmund, though, they beat Dortmund comfortably. And, I mean, we were the slightly better team against Dortmund, but we couldn't score against them, and they scored twice. So, I don't know. It's a weird group, isn't it? Like, everyone can beat each other. I think we knew it was going to be like that going into it. I'm just a bit pessimistic. I think their team on paper... Everyone talks about the decline of PSG because they lost Neymar and Messi. Well, Neymar missed half a season every time anyway, and Messi was kind of... He ghosted in the big games for PSG. Like, there's no two ways about it. So could he have carried them any further? I don't know. He's playing in the Disney League at the moment. And I just feel like their team isn't as bad as people are making out. I don't think they've dropped off a cliff that much, to be honest. There's a change of head coach that they're going to have to get used to. They brought in new players. Again, they need time to get used to that. They're not on top of the league as they probably hope to be, but they'll probably go on and win the league anyway. And they really need a win. You know, they need another win at home in front of their fans. And if we don't win this game, let's say best case scenario, we get a draw. Well, not best case scenario. Let's say we get a draw from this. Then we're on 3 points after three games. And all of a sudden, you're looking at having to win two of your last three. And, you know, you think Dortmund and PSG at home, you can target, but you don't want them to be the must-win games. And then you don't want to take it down to that last game away against Newcastle, because we saw what it did to PSG to play in that atmosphere. So, yeah, it's a tough one, this. It's a tough one. And I'm erring on the pessimistic side, and I think we might lose 2-1.
I think it'd be funny if we had another 0-0 draw in the Champions League. Just three games played, zero goals scored or conceded. Yeah, that's. I'm going to predict a draw. I don't know the score, but I'm going draw.
I think we're going to win. I think that our counterattack will serve us strong with Pulisic scoring a 1-0 win.
Well, you heard it here, the Sempre Milan podcast. One of us is always right because we all pick one of the three options, so...
Yep, straight down. Yeah. And then after Champions League action in the French capital, we will play against Napoli. So the week of fire will be completed by a trip to no Vesuvius pun there either. It just that's what the media have been calling it, the week of fire. We end it with a trip to face Napoli at the Stadio Diego Armando Maradona. We slapped them 4-0 there last season, and also we got a result in the Champions League quarterfinal second leg to get us through to the semis. So good memories at this stadium and in recent years. Let's hope it's not on false dawn like the Juve game. After five games of this season, everyone was talking about Napoli with the phrase worst Scudetto defence of all time. They won two of their first five games. They lost at home to Lazio. They threw away a lead against Genoa. No, they didn't. Sorry, they came back against Genoa, but still drew with Bologna. They've also lost at home to Fiorentina this season. They're pretty much as chaotic as a Rudy Garcia side should be. They had massive changes in the summer. Spalletti left. They lost Giuntoli. They lost Kim. And they signed players that I think people were unsure about whether they could be difference makers. Kajust from Reims, Lindstrom from Eintracht Frankfurt, who they paid quite a big fee for, that Nathan from Red Bull Bragantino, centre back as well. So they're kind of trusting their scouting on that front. But yeah, they've been a bit all over the place so far this season. They've 5 wins, 2 draws, 2 defeats. They are kind of breathing down our neck again a little bit, though, 4 points off us, and they are inside the top four. They won their last game 3-1 away against Hellas Verona.
They're in fifth.
Level on points with somebody.
Fiorentina. Yeah, Fiorentina is above them.
Fiorentina have got a better goal difference, but head-to-head. So, yeah, I suppose they'll be ahead at the moment.
It's because they haven't played. They must play today against Lecce. Yeah, they played today against Lecce. That's what it is.
That'll be it then. That'll be it. Yeah, and in the Champions League group stages so far, they beat Braga 2-1 away in their first game of that. It was a late winner in that one, 88th minute. And then they lost 3-2 at home against Real Madrid, and that was a really good game, to be honest. But yeah, Napoli this season, bit wild. How do you feel about this one, boys?
I just looking at their lineup, and knowing Osimhen is out for this game as well, looking at their lineup for the last game, Kvaratskhelia just doesn't do it for me this season. He
literally scored twice in the last game, by the way.
Congrats. It's Hell's Verona. Like, I'm shocked we only scored once, to be honest with you.
We did. But,
yeah, it was a scrappy game, but hey, we got the job done.
And it was our left winger as well who scored, I suppose. Yeah.
But yeah, he struggled. He did get married this weekend, so might be in honeymooning mentally. Yeah,
did he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I follow a couple of Napoli accounts, unfortunately.
How did he manage time to get married?
I don't fucking know. I'm not his friend. I didn't ask. I didn't ask the planning.
Did they play on Friday? No, they played on Saturday. Interesting. Yeah.
So he got married.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he might be maybe distracted. Maybe not. Maybe, you know, that gives him the push forward. Who knows?
Maybe a little bit less spunk in the cojones.
Yeah. I don't think Raspadori is that guy. I think Simeone is better. I don't know what his deal is. Is he still there? I don't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Okay.
So they've got three strikers who would do a job for us.
100%. Really. Their strikers are better than ours. Like, yeah. Let's be real. They are. But Politano, yeah, he had a man of the match performance against Hell's Verona. But again, it's just Verona. And I don't think Politano's that guy either. I think Teo shuts him down. We know Calabria shuts down Kvaratskhelia every single time. Our center back pairing of Tomori and probably Kalulu for this game, since Chao's obviously suspended, can shut down Raspadori or Simeone.
You just know it's going to be Kier, by the way, because of like he had a couple of good games against them last season.
Fuck me off. I hate that.
It's true.
I don't think their team's that good anymore. I think they've downgraded. Their defense isn't strong. We know that by the goals they're conceding, by the games they're losing, by the fact they lost Kim. Maybe it's Rudy Garcia's game plan compared to Spalletti, but their defense hasn't been on lock. Merritt has not been in, you know, PED abusing form like he was last season. I'm not saying he was. I'm just saying he was playing like he was.
Hey, big Papu Gomez, there. Though. Your concerns of years past ended up being true.
Yeah, well, I wish I wasn't. But
no, Anguissa,
yeah, I mean, they got a lot of injuries. Anguissa's out.
Yeah, he's big.
Juan Jesus is out. That's a big one. I think he's actually pretty solid for them. So this is a winnable game for us. It just comes down to how tired we are after PSG, I think, because they're playing Union Berlin, as you saw live. Not a good side. So anything.
Yeah, one of the worst teams I've ever seen live, to be honest. But I think they'll give him a good game, though, because what they are is they run about a lot. So I hope they make life difficult for Napoli, as they did for Real Madrid, who needed a last-minute winner to beat them. But yeah, you're right. I don't think he just hasn't got the same collective tune out of this team as Spalletti did yet. And I don't think he is going to. Like, there was even talk. De Laurentiis said in a public interview that, like, see how results go. We can sack Garcia if we want, you know, if things don't improve. That's not what you want when you're.
Well, he publicly over the international break said he was trying to sign Conte the whole time until Conte said no. And then win against Verona, he said, oh, the team won thanks to my instruction, like not Garcia's.
Dickhead.
Which is weird.
He's like full Berlusconi.
Publicly
executing. That is full Berlusconi for sure.
Yeah.
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 It's crazy. But whatever, you know, let them
We can't do much in terms of prediction of the team for this because, you know, as this happens when we preview the second game, we don't know what's going to happen. Selection for PSG and any injuries that might pop up, hopefully not, but hopefully some recoveries and whatnot. So we'll just do a prediction. I fancy this to be a high-scoring one. I think this is two teams that will have a real go at each other. It ain't going to be a chess battle because neither manager knows how to do that. So I think we'll just go at each other. Both teams will look for opportunities on the break. And why not a 3-2 win for us?
Because we're keeping a clean sheet. We're going 2-0 Milan victory. I think we're shutting down all their attacking threats. And when they struggle to score, Rudy Garcia takes off their biggest threats for some reason. So that's exactly what's going to happen.
I think we're taking an L.
There we go. We've got all three outcomes covered.
We don't.
Yeah, you guys both took the win. Wins.
Oh, right, cool. Yeah.
Oliver's moved just from here to here.
Yeah, never mind.
I think that Pioli struggles against top sides. And I know we don't want to admit that Napoli's a top side this year, but like they're in fifth, right? So
the good news is Inter play Roma, a side who has a Lukaku with a point to prove. That could be a troublesome game for them, or it could be a total shit show for Roma. Who knows? One of those sides are popping off big. But say it's Roma, say we win as well, we're back on top. And then again, the Juve game immediately doesn't matter. Or worst case scenario, we do lose this game and say Fiorentina win today and then also win at the weekend. I don't know who they're playing. They're playing Lazio at the weekend, so they probably won't win. And then say Juventus win. The worst thing that could happen to us is we're in fourth. We're still in top four no matter what. Like, so that could take a little bit of pressure off of us in this game, which could help.
Good result in Paris would help.
Yeah, it would really help. But
also, this is the toughest week. Like, it's a really tough 7 days, is this? Well, eight days, technically. There's no two ways about it. And once we get this out of the way, especially with the eight, like, we had eight absences for the Juve game. We're probably looking at five or six for PSG, and then we'll see from then on. But if we come out of that period unscathed, hopefully with like, if it has to be a loss, a draw, and a win, or loss, two wins, ideally, then we're over the hill then, and we can we have a bit of an easier schedule then up until Christmas, right, which I think
is important. In our season beginning previews, I had said before the season started, we're in first or second after our opening 10 games, we win the whole thing. Well, we're in second with one game left in that opening 10, so we'll see.
You also said we wouldn't lose a game before New Year.
I did say that, but that was in the Hot Takes bonus episode, so most of the listeners didn't see that. So let's cut that one out. But
don't. Go see it. Go subscribe.
Fair enough. Yeah. I got Christmas presents to buy. Please subscribe.
Yeah. Let's switch and do a couple of listener questions. Actually, one talking point before we do listener questions, but you'd have to put the thing up for it. There we go. The shareholders meeting took place today, and the 2022-23 accounts were officially, what do they call it? The consolidated accounts, which means that it's actually not a projection anymore. It's official. We made a 6.1 million euro profit. It's our first profit as a club since 2006. We had revenues over 400 million euros for the first time ever. There was like some cash injection of 70 mil or something as well. As we know, our debt situation is really good. Scaroni said some things about the stadium, about wanting to sign a top striker next summer and how our economic situation might allow us to do that. Importance of the Champions League. All that's on the website, so go and read the full transcript if you haven't already. And that is a big positive because we're looking at this, obviously, from a sporting point of view. Everything we talk about is what happens on the pitch generally. And we're thinking about being in a Scudetto fight with Juve and Inter, potentially Napoli. The bottom line is we are so much more stable and we have so much better long-term prospects for success. Inter are in real trouble. Like, Sunning are going to have to find some...
You've been saying that Inter's in trouble for like 3-4 years.
And it's going to blow up eventually. It's going to blow up eventually. Like, when the bond payments expire and when Oaktree come calling for their money back, they're in trouble. That's why they keep having to sell a big player every year. And I just don't think they can keep doing it, especially when Marotta leaves. As
I think they're going to sell the club sooner than later.
Yeah, but... It's tough
to sell players to pay off debt before they sell the club.
Yeah, it's a tough one because of the debt situation. You know, whoever wants to buy the club has to pay X amount more to clear all the debts, or alternatively, they will not asset strip, but you know, they'll sell off assets to bridge the gap, and that can be difficult.
It's going to be exactly how Elliot acquired us. Oaktree's going to take over Inter because they're going to not be able to pay back their shit, and then Oaktree's going to sell off some players. And either do what Elliot did and flip it around, or they're just going to strip everything down and then sell it again for a slight profit and get out.
So. It'd be interesting to see what happens with them. And then we know Juve are a bit all over the place with what's gone on with their various cases and change of ownership and the Agnelli family and the new board of directors.
Someone else in the family take control?
It's basically still their club, to be honest. It's just like a puppet thing. And Napoli never have 2 years in a row without drama. So stability could be massive for us, and especially having a bit of money in the bank certainly helps, because we need to keep improving this squad year on year. That becomes obvious. But yeah, good news on the financial front anyway. And questions this time. Gregory Peck says, it feels like we don't have a plan B in matches. So what do you think our plan B should be?
We don't have a plan B because our manager is not smart enough to have one. If we have a new manager, we'll have a plan B. That should be our plan.
I agree with you, but I also don't think it's got to be that extreme. I think we could come up with a plan B, and I think Pioli has a plan B. It's just not a good one. I think what we should have done, looking at the situation against Juve, I mean, I already ranted at length about it, but we saw plan B. It was go to a two-striker formation with Giroud still the focal point, and then bring on Jovic, because, I don't know, don't do that. You know, just go more mobile. You the whole point of a substitution is to change the game. And so bringing on a player like for like who already does the same thing is not changing the game. It's just changing the name on the back of the shirt. You need to bring on someone who gives you something different. You know, it doesn't matter if it's this is better or worse. It's this is different than what wasn't working. That's the only thing. That's the whole point of a substitution, right? Is to change the way the game's going out. And he's not doing that. So got to improve our substitutions. And I guess that's it.
The narrative pisses me off, though, because over the international break, all the talk has been about how Milan, top of the table, have won all but one game in the league, got the summer signings bang on. You know, we've seen contribution. You've got Reiner's two assists, Loftus-Cheek with a goal, a couple of assists. Musa got his first assist. Pulisic, four goals, including two game winners. Like, all the talk was about how good our summer transfer window was, how well we'd recovered after the derby, how we'd got our defensive solidity back, and we were, you know, perhaps struggling a little bit on the number nine front, but Okafor was scoring goals. And everything became praise towards what we'd done and what we were doing. And all of a sudden we were taking a serious title candidates. And now everything switched again. I've never seen so many, well, I have seen as many as this, but I was surprised by the amount of purely out stuff after last night's game in particular. It's like, that's the game that you want to prove your point in. Yeah, some of us very frustrated with the substitutions that he made, but ultimately he was let down by one of his players in a big moment in the game.
I think what annoys me, I apologize for interrupting your rant, but he's not making smart substitutions. And like, that's part of the reason why, like, I don't want Pioli at the helm of the club. And like, this is not the first time that we've seen him do it. He is playing players that he likes over players that we need, right? Keeping, like, we all know that he loves Giroud, right? He leaves him in. Krunic, in. Jovic, in. There's other players on the bench that would have done a better job.
Do we know if he loves Jovic, though, or is he just giving him a chance?
What?
He said he brought Jovic on because it was like for like.
But which is exactly why I disagree with that. So why would you do like for like? Change it. We're a man down. You need creativity, right?
You've got to acknowledge, though, with the substitutions for last night's game, one, shit situation, we're down to 10 men. We're chasing the ball about a little bit. Number two, we had 8 players out, so we don't have the same options to be able to call off the bench as we normally would. You know, so it's not a normal game in that sense. If you want to pick out other games before that where you think, oh, he got that sub wrong, that's fair enough. I just think last night's game is a really weird one to point at and say that's why he should be sacked. If you want to do it after we get decimated by Inter in the derby again, I totally understand that. If we lose the return derby this season, I will literally just convert fully to purely out, because you have to prove that you've learned from certain situations. But don't turn around after a 1-0 loss with 10 men to a deflected shot, point the finger at the manager and say, you've got to go after that. It's a snowball effect, though.
Yeah. No, I think you're both right. It's not that
this just came out of nowhere. People are like, fuck this guy.
No, you're both right. But this isn't the game that breaks the back, you know? I think Ollie's right. This game wasn't a bad defeat. Obviously, it was in terms of arrival. We could have gone top of the table, blah, 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 the narrative, whatever. But and also, I don't think the 8 men out is that big of an issue when 2 of them are goalkeepers, 2 of them are left backs, one being a youth left back. Like, it kind of skews it a little bit. But Yeah, I think the substitutions is a legitimate issue, one that he's repeated multiple times over his entire tenure. The guy's been here since 2019. It's not like he's still learning the team and the club. Like, obviously, there's been a huge turnover since then, but I don't know. I go back and forth with it. I'm not peeling out because of the Juve game, if that's the point we're making here. I don't think this is the game. I agree with Ollie on that, but I do agree with Madison that it has snowballed, and it's going to be maybe not a massive defeat that will break the camel's back. I just don't think this was the game. I think he does have a built-in excuse with the red card.
Would you sack him now?
No.
No.
So you're not peeling out then? Because otherwise you'd sack him right now.
I wouldn't sack him right now, but I don't think that he is going to be the manager of our club.
So you'd give him until the end of a very important season, even though you don't think he's the right man.
Yeah,
there's hypocrisy to the argument. I just don't
don't think that sacking a manager in the middle of the Champions League group stage and a very busy fall schedule is constructive, right? Because there will be results in there that he will win, but I don't think that he is like he doesn't have the tactics to really like lead this team forward. He's a very average manager. And that we are getting average results.
I'm in agreement. I think by the end of the season, we'll probably be time to move on.
But yeah, like I don't think Madison's saying I need this guy gone by the end of the season. I just think he's saying I could see how we're getting there where he won't be.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'm assuming that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
If he's like losing games,
he's not winning us the Champions League, but also the Champions League comes down to a lot more your players, right? Like we look at the teams who have won it. Position for position, we're not beating most of those teams, you know? I think we're a great team, and we could definitely win the Serie A this year, and that's with Pioli or without Pioli. I think we had the players to do that, and I think the Scudetto we did win with Pioli was a lot of Pioli. I think it worked well. The players love him. You see when Leao scored against Verona, the first thing he did was run over and hug Pioli when there was all that talk about Pioli out after the Derby. And I was one of those guys. I said, get this fucking dude out of here because a 5-1 defeat in the Derby is not acceptable. It shouldn't be. If we sacked him then, I don't think there'd be many people against it. But the players love him. They showed that. And I don't think you take a figure like that away from the club. Not after Maldini who was the same thing. And Zlatan, who hasn't come back yet. He probably will, but hasn't. So there's a lot of moving parts to it. And I don't think sacking Pioli anytime soon is going to help the club.
No.
But I agree with you. Long term, if our goal is to win the Champions League, it's probably not going to be with Pioli. I just don't see him having the ability to do that because the managers that do win it can change tactics on a fly. They recognize it mid-game and can change it up and make it work. You know,
also, they get the best biggest out of criticism
is that he overthinks it. But I'd rather a manager that overthinks and makes those changes than a manager who just says, well, this is how I started the game. This is how we're going to end it. Like he did against Inter and we conceded 5 goals for the 5th game in a row. You know, like we keep getting our asses kicked by one team because we won't change the tactics. So I definitely want a guy who could evolve and I don't think Pioli can, but right now, leave him. He's the guy we have. Who else are we going to get? You know, we're not paying a release clause. There's no one available who's better.
I think we should he's the curse, by the way. I do think we should, at the bare minimum, strive to have the best manager in the city of Milan. And we don't at the moment. I think Simone Inzaghi is a better coach across the board. And he's proven it in recent games, like 5 derby wins in a row. Who that is, I don't know. I mean, we got a follow-up question that I'm going to ask. I had it on my list anyway, from Nevan Vran. Would you like to see De Zerbi be our next coach? He's doing a great job in England. Toughest league in the world, by the way.
Did you add that, or did he?
He added that in brackets with a smiley face. I think he's been sarcastic and saying
gotcha.
Because he's been sarcastic saying that Brighton are doing a good job in what's not the toughest league in the world and using that as a justification for why De Zerbi should be our next manager.
But, I think De Zerbi is a good manager. And
I think he is.
Yeah. Props to Nikita. He called it when he was at Sassuolo years ago. He was like, dude, this guy's good. I would take her. No. Yeah, he was a Sassuolo, right? Or am I thinking of Francesco? Yeah, he was also there.
No.
I like De Zerbi. I think he's good. He plays
right. Football. I think that he would come back for a big Italian club.
He's in Milan.
A big Italian club because he's not getting paid Brighton money at Milan. We know that. You know, he could go to City after Pep decides.
How much
done.
Is he making?
Pep's already said
at Brighton?
More than we could afford. I don't know. I just know that Prem pays a lot.
I don't know. I could find it out, but he's got a 30 mil release clause. So, like, there is something to
but
go.
Also, like, I think people you'd be like, surprised that when the time comes, Jerry, I think Jerry will open up the checkbook for the right things.
Do you think that a good head coach is worth as much as a good player?
Yes.
A good player costs you 25 million.
A good head coach can turn an average player good.
So his salary at Brighton is actually
it's not that high.
Not a lot. It's only £2 million pounds.
Yeah.
Which translates to about what Pioli's on at 3.5 euros.
You gotta remember that he came from Shakhtar. So like
right, and he was at 1.5
his
at Shakhtar.
Was kind of low, but he left Sassuolo for Shakhtar to get a big pay rise, I think, and also to coach in Europe. The thing about De Zerbi is an interesting discussion because he's getting a lot of praise at the moment from managers around Europe, but like you see Pep waxing lyrical about him and saying he could be the next manager of Manchester City. But this season, Brighton have lost at home to AEK Athens in Europe. They lost 6-1 against Aston Villa. They lost 3-1 at home to West Ham United. Obviously, it's a bit of a small sample size to go on. But last
who did they lose to at home last season?
Last season, Everton, they lost the last game of the season 2-1 against Villa, whatever. They lost 4-1 against Newcastle, 5-1 against Everton, 3-1 against Nottingham Forest. They lost at home to Fulham. They got four put past them at home by Arsenal. They lost at home to Aston Villa. They lost 2-0 away.
They've lost like, five times what this I'm saying season. Is, they haven't won a game in their last five. So
what I'm saying is that like everyone who fantasizes about De Zerbi becoming our next manager right now in the immediacy, he's still figuring some shit out himself. He's a young head coach and losing 6-1 to anybody, as I say that we lost 5-1 to Inter, but if you lose 6-1 to an Aston Villa level club as Milan manager, you ain't making it at the other side of that game. You're not. So for people to actively want to hire a manager who is clearly still refining his own tactical approach, I think we just need to be patient on that front. If the opportunity comes up in the summer and Brighton have done well in Europe and he's managed to juggle things well, they finish in the top seven again, whatever, then fair enough. There's a serious argument to be had there. But I think people don't understand that De Zerbi is still very up and down. They just see, oh, Brighton, trendy club, good players, you know. They have been backed, like they have invested in the transfer window. They've sold players as well. But like it's not the fairy tale that people are making out, and they do get hammered quite regularly. And I just don't think that would stack up particularly well at Milan because we're such a demanding club, and it's his club as well. Like he came through the youth academy with us. He said publicly over the last few months that all of his football education came from Milan. He's a Milan fan, so like I think if the opportunity came, he wouldn't turn it down either. But it's got to be right for everyone, and at the moment, he isn't close to the finished product. You know,
he's also
exciting.
A young coach in both age and managerial career. Yeah. Like he's the only big clubs, and I big apostrophes on big clubs, but I should you know what the only top flight clubs he's been at, which is a better way to put it, Brighton, Shakhtar, and Sassuolo. Before that, he was bouncing around Serie B, Serie C with Palermo, Foggia, Benevento, like. He's still new to the game, you know, and against top clubs, he's doing well in the Premier League. And that's huge because it will translate long term into experience and skill. But is he going to win us a Champions League? Fuck no. You know, like, I don't think he's there yet. Maybe in 10 years, he'll have so much more experience and be better. But I wouldn't replace Pioli for him today. That can change, though, you know, but today, October 23rd, 2023, no.
Exactly. And that's I think it's just a dose of realism to everybody who is so quick to point out on social media, we could sack Pioli today and get De Zerbi in. A, I don't think we could. You can't make that kind of change mid-season. And B, just have a look at De Zerbi and make sure that's what you really, really want at this moment in time. And I think it might happen in time, but at the moment, we've got to be careful. Final question comes from Gregory Peck. Let's do a quick fire on it. Who will succeed more at Milan? Ibra's son, Maximilian, or Daniel Maldini?
Well, Danny Maldini's already won a Scudetto, so I guess I got to give it to him at the moment.
Bar's pretty high.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. I'll say Max. Why not? Like, if Daniel Maldini's Milan career is over, it could well be. Like, he might have played his last game for us already, given that he's now going out on loan spells and he can't stay fit. And I think actually they have an option to buy him as well. So we'll see. We've got a buyback, but we might not use it. You never know. Now with Paolo gone, we don't have that same sentimental attachment, perhaps. But yeah, Max, why not? He's a striker. He's 16. He could start banging him in. I think he has scored this season.
The way I'm looking at it is Maldini comes from the Maldini dynasty, obviously. People who refuse to leave Milan. Well, Danny's left it twice already. And then you look at Maximilian, comes from Zlatan, who is notoriously going where the money's at, where the trophies are at, whatever, you know. Yeah. We don't know if he has an attachment to Milan. Was he born in Milan? I don't know if this is the son that was or not, but
I think he's born in Italy, yeah.
Yeah, so he could have been in Milan. I don't know. It wouldn't shock me. He's spent a lot of years there, but I don't know. Maybe he doesn't have aspirations to be a Milan legend. Like, his father's not going to force that upon him. His father knows better than anyone that football can take you all over the world and tons of places. So, I don't know. Is it a hot take to say neither of them have a good career?
He might end up being coached by his dad. Zlatan does his badges and stuff. Yeah, I think Daniel Maldini has actually already had at least a semblance of a Milan career, like to win a major trophy. And
he scored a winner.
Important goal in that. Yeah. He's also scored against Milan and against Inter. So that's like kind of crazy. He seems to follow the narrative. Yeah, we'll wrap it up there, boys. Thank you to everybody who listened to the entirety of this episode and stuck with us after the frustrating Juve defeat. Drop us your thoughts, the lineups you pick for the upcoming two games, what you think on the Pioli out debate, and yeah, any other thoughts that you have. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher HH. Joining.
Yeah, don't forget to like and subscribe if you haven't already, guys. We're really close to 10,000 subs and we'd love to hit that by the end of the year. And that's, you know, up to you guys if you want to. We appreciate it. If not, it's all good, but definitely do it if you've forgotten to. So thanks for listening.
It's been a joy, even though this weekend was not.
Good way to summarize the weekend. Thank you for watching, everybody. We will catch you in a week's time.
Gol! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'ora all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio...